Hello everyone and welcome back to Going Purple with me, Lissy McIntosh, where we talk about serious F1 stuff in a not so serious way. How's everyone doing? I'm so excited to bring you this episode of Going Purple because I have such an incredible guest with me, someone I look up to and respect massively. It is Mr. Tom Bellingham, the founder of WTF1, the, I would say, most successful F1 social page in all of existence, with over a million followers on Instagram, a million subscribers on YouTube, and 800,000 followers on Twitter. That is a hell of a lot of people, as we talk about later on in this episode. I was so intrigued to talk to Tommy and ask him all about how he started the business, what it means to him to look back on the last 12 years, and of course I had to ask him all about his love for Max Verstappen as well. I'm going to keep this intro short. I will be doing a bonus episode in the next week or so, so look out on my Instagram. I'll normally pop a question box up about what we're going to talk about in the bonus episode. I mean, yeah, summer's started now, people, and I'm in a great mood. And I hope this episode puts you in a great mood too. I'm sure it will. Let me know what you thought of it over on my socials at Lissy McIntosh on TikTok and Instagram. And let's jump straight into it. Let's go. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for joining me on Going Purple. It's such an honour to have you. I've got to start off by asking you about the Monaco Grand Prix. Did you enjoy it? What did you think? It was a long one. It was a long race.
I did. I really like Monaco. I'm a self-confessed Monaco fanboy. I know it's quite a controversial race. A lot of people don't like it. Yeah. I've got a nostalgic connection to it because it was the first race I ever went to with my dad, and the first F1 race I ever went to, me and my dad were like, rather than going to Silverstone, we saved up for like 4 years and we're like, we're going to do it properly and go to Monaco as like the first one. And I think that's always been like really nostalgic to me. So I love the race anyway, even when it's boring, which I know a lot of people don't. Yeah. But I think that was probably about as good as the Monaco Grand Prix could be, right?
I agree. There was everything in there. But do you think they made the right decisions on the day, race control? Because I heard a lot of people saying if they had raced when it was wet, and obviously not when it was like chucking it down, but, you know, 10 or so minutes afterwards, you know, we would have had a bit of a wet Monaco race. Could that have helped its case? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I heard there was all sorts of problems that they had, like power cuts and all sorts of things going on, which made it like delayed. But it's a difficult job. But I mean, Monaco is a very unique and weird race where they seem to have their own set of rules, if you like. One of them being the TV direction, which again was particularly great. I think they missed so many overtakes, but. Yeah, it wasn't a great look for Formula One again to essentially have a massive rain delay and just no one really understanding what was going on. I feel like they need someone, we discussed it, like they need someone from the FIA. You know, it's 2022, social media exists.
Yeah.
Can they not just put a message out so at least the fans know what's going on?
100%. I agree with you. Well, I don't know. I thought it was a pretty good Monaco Grand Prix, I will say. What have been your thoughts on the season so far other than Monaco?
Yeah, it's really good. I'm really liking it. The new rules give it a bit of a shake-up. Mm-hmm. If I was hypercritical, I'd say it would have been nice to have more teams at the front.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when they have a shake-up, you're kind of hoping deep down that you might get like a random Haas victory or something ridiculous, but it's still very much the Red Bulls and the Ferraris. While it's nice to have, you know, Ferrari at the front now, it's still very much how it used to be, but replace Ferrari with Mercedes and it's those four cars just off at the front. So I'm really enjoying it. The battle is really interesting between Leclerc and Verstappen, and now Perez seems to have just joined it as well. So I don't think anyone saw that coming. It's amazing.
Who's your money on for the champion?
I've got to support my boy.
I mean, it's obvious.
Obvious, yeah. But I think bearing mechanical failures, I think Max just seems slightly scary how consistent he can be. I mean, I was saying on our podcast that Monaco is the worst race he's had. Mm-hmm. I think since that he's actually finished since Hungary last year, and he's still on the podium. Yeah. I mean, the guy just every time he finishes the race, he's on the podium. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what wins you championships when you have a bad day and you're still finishing third.
Yeah,
that's very good in a championship, isn't it?
Yeah, also I think when you're having a bad day and your teammate can really step up and really help you out. I think Checo is so underrated in my opinion. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is obviously you love Max Verstappen. And it's really nice to see, because a lot of people I talk to in this space are like, I'm neutral, I don't have a favourite. And it's really cool to see that you actually really support one driver. And I want to ask you why. Why do you support Max Verstappen so much?
So it's a weird one, but when I so obviously WTF one, yeah. You can probably see is the like all our like social graphics and stuff are black and orange.
Okay.
And it's kind of like how kids support Ferrari when you're a kid, because you're like, I like the red car.
Yeah.
Where I supported when I was watching football, I just thought it was really cool that the Dutch football team wore orange, and it was like really different to everything else. It's such a childish like thing, but I mean, I was 5, 6, 7 years old or whatever. So when Verstappen's dad was in F1, he was in Orange Arrows, mm-hmm. and that team I just loved because I thought the car looked cool. I just liked the livery. I was like, that's a cool car, orange, brilliant. Which is kind of what you do when you're a kid, don't you? You just look at the pretty colours of the cars and go, I like that one. So obviously I had that sort of like always support the Dutchies in sport and stuff. And then I actually worked for Red Bull before as a freelancer, yeah. And I heard about Verstappen was doing karting and his junior career and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to follow this guy and he's going to be like the guy I support through the junior ranks, you know, follow his whole career. And supporting him through the junior ranks lasted 1 year because he got straight into Formula One. Then, yeah, it's been like a weird, I like his style as well. I think I've always supported the drivers that are super aggressive, and I understand that people don't like that about certain drivers. I've always been... I do like drivers for their personality and stuff as well, but I've always been a bit, I've always liked a driver that's just is going to go for the overtake, even if it's like sabotaging their own race. I loved Montoya when he was in F1. I liked Pastor Maldonado as well. Those kind of drivers that, you know, if there's an overtake, even if it means them losing a wheel, they're going to go for it. Okay. And, That for me is why F1's exciting. So that's why I support Verstappen. And last year was quite mad supporting him.
I think last year was so interesting because people were so split down the middle, and it was either like you are a Lewis fan or a Max fan. And I just felt like it was a bit strange online because a lot of people, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think last season became really personal between F1 fans for the first time in a while. I don't know how.
It's a shame. Yeah. I didn't really like it. It made the title fight really good. I mean, I really like Lewis Hamilton as well, which I was a big fan of him when he was at McLaren. He was again, like, I liked Lewis because he was a really aggressive driver when he first got into Formula One, and I tend to sort of like, once a driver's achieved success, I'll like pick a new favorite, like coming through the ranks and stuff.
Fair enough.
I'm like the opposite of a glory supporter, maybe. but I'll see how long I keep supporting Verstappen. But Hamilton, there was something about last year where it made the season super exciting, mm-hmm. but there was a bit of a nasty side to it where it felt a little bit almost like football rivalry, where it was like you had to support this or that. And, you know, I have no problem with WTF1 is like a fan you know, we pride ourselves on being a fan channel, and I don't hide the fact that I support Max Verstappen. Yeah. But because at the end of the day, I'm a Formula One fan, and I don't, like, people call me like a journalist and stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm just an F1 fan that likes to talk about F1. If you want to call me a journalist and call me biased or whatever, I don't care, because I'm just an F1 fan that likes making content. And you know, even as a Verstappen fanboy, you know, I can go into a podcast and admit that in Saudi Arabia his driving was like awful and stuff like that. And you do get this like stan culture now, where as soon as you say someone has a bad race, you're like, why do you hate this driver and stuff? And
yeah,
it's a shame.
I think the nuance has been taken away from the sport massively in the last couple of years. But talking about WTF1, how fitting. tell me about how you started F1. And yeah, tell me about how it started out, because it was just you that started it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So I've been a Formula One fan since I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. And when I was at university, my first year at university doing music.
Music, okay.
Yeah, so I was doing music. So I had... it was very much a degree of like, I don't know what to do. I don't really know what I want to do, but I like playing guitar and I like music. And there was a few like avenues there where I could get into like, you know, sound for TV and things like that. But I was massively into Formula One and I was still, yeah, like a huge fan of Formula One. And I just set up, I was getting into like a few websites and blogs and stuff and reading more about Formula One online. I mean, this is ages ago. This is 2010.
Okay.
So throwback Twitter, and the internet was just a very different place.
Instagram hadn't started yet, had it?
No, I don't think Instagram would have even been around. Okay. So it was just a Facebook page and a Twitter page. And you know, a couple of thousand followers. Mm-hmm. If that, I think I probably had like 500 followers for ages. And it felt like there were only about 40 people on Twitter that liked Formula One. Mm-hmm. Now it's obviously massive. But yeah, I just thought I wanted to do this as a side project. I wanted to create a website or like a blog that basically was a bit more silly in personality and from a fan's perspective, rather than the auto sports and the BBC sports, where it's kind of more factual and this is what happened in the race.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Whereas mine was more like, oh, Maldonado's crashed again. This is quite silly, isn't it? Or Mark Webber's done a podium jump and it's been photoshopped into loads of silly things and things like that. Capturing the sort of like fan culture and the fans like to, especially now, like it's really, really apparent. But as Formula One fans, you know, we live and breathe it every single day. It's not just a Sunday thing. Yeah. So, you know, it's Tuesday now and me and you are sat here talking about Formula One. So it's not just a Sunday afternoon thing, really.
I think it's crazy how you started doing something 12 years ago, which now so many people are doing. Did you think you started it? Oh, I think social media is going to be on the rise in the next 10 years. I think I'm positioning myself well. Or was it purely like, I like doing this and people love it as well?
Yeah, it definitely was like, I'm not going to pretend that I was some business genius. It was like, there's definitely some luck involved. I would say like, I put in a lot of effort into it. It was, and then especially when it started to get noticed and I started to get more opportunities through WTF1 than I was through my university work. And it was kind of, that was the first thought where I was like, this could be actually a career rather than, you know, my university degree. And, you know, getting invited to like Sky Sports for their like media day and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, like a lot of people like read this now and think it's funny and like it. But yeah, it was very much like me just putting my personality into social media and being a nerdy F1 fan basically and telling the story from that side. Yeah. And it is funny now how, like you say, there's so many, but we really were just a standout
page
at the time. There was no one else really doing it.
Do you think because of how much social media has grown in, say, even like the last 2 years, have you noticed that WTF1 has scaled more, say, like in the last couple of years than it did, I don't know, in the first 4 years that you started it? And do you think that's because of how social media is changing as well on the whole?
Yeah, absolutely. You can literally pinpoint. I think there's quite a few factors. It's like almost like a perfect storm. So like I was doing it for ages, so it was successful. It had, you'd probably say more like a cult following. It was like a few people had heard of it. It was gaining more recognition and it was still kind of unknown. I was kind of anonymous as well with it. Like I didn't show my face. I just had like a little tag. Yeah. And then when we started the YouTube channel, obviously it like picked up another gear. That was in 2017. But yeah, 2019, actually probably 2020, weirdly, the lockdown. And I think in a very bizarre way, obviously, while I'd love Formula One, I wanted Formula One on the television.
Yeah.
And to have those races, that the lockdown in 2020, where the season got delayed for like 5 months,
yeah.
all the kind of broadcasters and things and those news sites were obviously like panicking because it's like, oh, what do we write about? Whereas that for WTF1 was such a huge opportunity because you had, you know, Charles Leclerc and Alex Albon crashing trucks on Twitch and stuff and things like that. So our viewership just skyrocketed. And then we very much sort of embraced the fact that so many new fans were coming to us and finding us on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we've never been, you know, there's some questionable people online that like to gatekeep Formula One, and we're very much you know, we love telling, like showing how much we love Formula One and making our content for someone that's watched Formula One for 20 years and just likes to nerd out about it, or someone that's literally watched one race and wants to know a little more
and wants to have a laugh. Everyone likes to see Michael Bottas meme every now and then.
Certain ones, maybe not his bum so much.
Well, no, I mean, that's really interesting. I didn't realize that 2020, that, I mean, it's amazing. A lot of businesses just in general really struggled. And the fact that you actually scaled up in that year is incredible. And I mean, you said earlier, like, I'm not a business whiz, but you know, you have grown a massive business. And where do you think that business mindset comes from? Is this something you kind of learn on the job, or talk me through that?
Yeah, it is genuinely like, I'm not just saying that, I'm not trying to be like modest, but it is like the reason I think the success has come is because it is so authentic. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do this about cricket. Like, I don't watch cricket. I don't know anything about it. And even if, you know, cricket's really popular, that's where, you know, there's loads of sponsors and loads of money. And this, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't have a clue. And, you know, WTF1 was never meant to, I never thought it could ever be a full-time job at the start. And it's just happened that way. And a lot of it has been like learning as I go. Like I've learned so much from other people I've worked with, the different situations that WTF1's been in, where it's was just me, then it was me and my wife Katie doing it, then it was then I was doing freelance work, then I was doing you know, working it was under Car Throttle, so I learned loads from them, and it was more about like making an online community and social media. And it is cheesy, but it's just like life experience. And like I know so much more now than I did of what works and how to do it, and a lot of it just comes natural. But I think part of it is just the fact that everything's quite easy.
So you talked a little bit about working with different people and, you know, the stages that WTF1 has gone through, but talk to me a little bit about the day-to-day running of WTF1 now. Obviously you have Matt and Katie with you as well, and they're kind of like the other faces of WTF1, but are there lots of other people that work, you know, underneath all of you as well?
Yeah, so we're under the Race Media umbrella, if you like. Yeah. So if you've heard of The Race, they are probably like a more serious publication in terms of more that kind of newsy and informative, and they've got, you know, journalists at the races, and they very much are like the go-to place for, you know, technical information and things like that. We're part of the same company, but we obviously sit separate in terms of like, we're not trying to beat each other. We're very much our own unique thing. And on the WTF One side, we have obviously me doing lots of different things, like social media admin, and doing the podcasts, and, you know, a little bit of everything really. Katie doing website, and again, podcasts, helping with video scripts, blah, blah, blah. We have Matt, one full-time editor, two freelance editors, and then, so they're like the main lot, if you like. Okay. And we've also got a new guy that's just started, who's an editorial assistant as well, who's helping us with writing and a bit of social media.
Small team.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of the actual content, pretty much, yeah, everything that, in terms of the actual content team, it really is just like four of us doing everything, which is crazy when we're competing with the likes of, you know, like Autosport and BBC and Motorsport, that must have, like, you know, like 200 employees writing thousands of articles and stuff. And that's who we get compared to, with essentially like four or five of us just like, yeah, F1.
Well, it clearly works.
But it works, yeah. So, I think that just the authenticness of it seems to work. So
what does it mean for WTF1 to have reached 1 million followers on Instagram?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like,
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, so we reached 1 million YouTube subscribers, I want to say like a month ago, then 1 million Instagram recently, and I think we're on about 800,000 Twitter followers. So we're not far off Twitter getting to 1 million. So I reckon that'll be next.
Okay.
Unless we absolutely nail TikTok. Yeah, it's amazing. It's a weird one though, because I think with numbers, it's so easy to get caught up in numbers. It's hard to like visualize it sometimes.
1 million followers, that's like 10 Wembley stadiums.
I think I said this, so like,
really?
Okay, I said this to Katie, that I think our podcast on YouTube gets 150,000, like, or like 100, whatever. And I think I mentioned to Katie, I was like, every time you do a podcast, that like it's two Wembley stadiums watching you talk about F1. And she was like, oh, don't say that. I'm like really nervous now.
Oh.
And it is weird. It is weird because sometimes you can't, almost put it into, it's really hard to process, because like 1 million, you just see like one M.
Yeah, you literally just see like the K turn to an M.
Yeah. And what's weird is when we were growing in like 2017, I think it was, we just launched the YouTube channel. So we'd had the YouTube channel for like 5 months. We'd got to probably 100,000 YouTube subscribers quite quickly. And, you know, had a big following on Twitter, blah, blah, blah. And you see these numbers and you see videos getting like 100,000, 200,000, whatever. Yeah. And it's just a number. But we went to the Azerbaijan Grand Prix to do we were working for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, like helping them with social media.
Okay.
And we went into the fan zone for the first time. And this was the first ever experience of us going to a race since we'd like really started the channel and stuff. And like, there's like people from like Azerbaijan coming up to us going like, oh my God, you're WTF1 and stuff. And it was so weird, because
so cool.
You kind of can't process that until you just see a number on a screen. But until like people come up to you and they're like, oh, I watch it. You like, it was a proper like, oh my God, these are real people that like love what we do and stuff. And that was a really amazing and surreal experience. But yeah, now to think that many people are watching is crazy.
That's so incredible to hear that you've built up a business which is so personal to you, and so successful. And I wonder if there are any kind of business decisions that you've had to make, which maybe have been more difficult because of how personal WTF1 is to you.
Yeah, it has been. It's been difficult because there's been a lot of moments that have been quite difficult. One is just the fact that it was such a grind in the early days that you are essentially like taking that gamble of like,
yeah.
I mean, I was lucky that, you know, I had that freelance work to do more and stuff, but you know, my poor wife that had to like, you know, I'm there at like 3 a.m, like, oh, I'm just like fixing this website and stuff. thankfully hasn't like didn't leave me because she had to obviously put, you know, it was like, I've recently just had our first baby, but WTF1 was like a baby, honestly. Like it was like my child because, you know, I was doing it, you know, essentially all on my own. And when news was happening, I had to react to it and stuff. And it was a big grind in the early days. And then I guess the first difficult decision was to sell the business to Carthrall, which was like the first major sort of huge decision of like letting go a little bit. But I'll be honest, I'd got to the point where one, I was kind of sick of doing it on my own and wanted more people to help me. Mm-hmm. And two, I was almost ready to like completely give up on it because I couldn't manage my time because I was getting so much freelance work. And again, I mean, this comes from the business side of it. I was getting so much freelance work and I couldn't justify making like 32p on Google Ads for a full-time job when Red Bull were offering to pay me a lot of money to like, you know, write blogs and stuff. So it was like, yeah, can't keep doing this. And then when that opportunity came about and it was like, right, we, you know, you can sell it and we'll employ you. And it was like, it was the chance to do WTF1 full time. And a lot of people, you know, it's quite easy to look at it now and go, oh, well, you know, look how successful it's got. But like, I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. Yeah. It was like, the expertise of other people and essentially like letting go of the reins a little bit. So I don't regret it like one bit.
Wow. When you work for yourself, it's like do you find it difficult to have boundaries between like, you know, the workday and like your personal, you know, when the workday ends? Because like you said, if there's a piece of news that comes out at 10 p.m., you know, what can you do? You have to react to it because
yeah,
no one else is.
Yeah, that was the hardest thing. Is and another reason why I wanted to like get more people involved is because yeah, it becomes like a full-time job. And I mean, there's no way one person could do it these days because there's so many races, there's so much news, it's you never get a break. And now I'm lucky that we've sort of got a great team around me that we all like sort of like cover each other and know what to do, and there's people up to speed with it. But yeah, like when it was just me and it was like, right, we're going on holiday, I had to basically just go, well, sorry, I know Fernando Alonso's retired or whatever, but I'm on holiday, so we'll just have to leave WTF1 for now. So that was why it kind of worked out well.
Well, what's next for WTF1?
Definitely on the agenda is like growing our podcast to be even bigger. Yeah. We're putting more episodes out of different styles rather than just being like news things and like doing different series like interviews and stuff. Obviously YouTube, yeah, continuing to grow that. And I guess it's really like events and stuff we're doing. We've got our own campsite at Silverstone, which
Tell
is
me about
amazing.
It's the WTF1 clubhouse, isn't it?
Yeah, so we've got we have like a subscription thing where people pay £2 a month and they can join like our Discord, and we're sometimes in the Discord chatting, or they watch our podcast live as we record it, which also includes us setting up. Yeah, it includes us setting up, which it normally is about 10 minutes of me trying to get my dog to shut up and Matt to, you know, find the right microphone or whatever. But it's quite funny because obviously people get that behind the scenes look of how unorganized we are. So we offer that, and then those members have the opportunity to essentially like have this camping experience where we do like a Team WTF One clubhouse. So we have our own campsite at Silverstone where we do like an F1 pub quiz at night, and like live music, and we've got like a stage where we do our live podcast for people and stuff. And it was really good last year. We didn't know what to expect because it's the first time we did it, but it was so surreal being at Silverstone, where I'd obviously like gone to as a kid, and it's like, wow, this is like our thing now. And loads of people are camping with us to like see what we're doing and stuff. And yeah, it was awesome.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was honestly such an honor to have Tommy from WTF1 on the podcast, hearing all his insights into how he's growing the page. I know a lot of you ask me how to, you know, get into content creation, and speaking to someone who's done it on such a massive scale was so interesting. I think what WTF1 is doing was so revolutionary in the way it started so long ago. That's one thing I definitely didn't realize before. And how it's living on now, and how it's growing and getting even bigger. And if you guys want to check out the clubhouse, the WTF1 clubhouse at Silverstone, then I'll leave the WTF1 website in the show notes of this episode, along with Tommy's socials and mine, which are at Lissy McIntosh on TikTok and Instagram. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. I'm sending you lots and lots of love, and I will talk to you all very, very soon. Bye.